that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape,
well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Chimwits. So what do we got on tap for today, Justin?
We are expanding a little bit. We are going into the world of finance, or maybe not direct finance, but sort of finance philosophy. I guess we are fitness philosophy, so we're sort of going into the world of finance philosophy, or what we call financial fitness.
I don't think we coined that. The way you said it made it sound like we coined
like
that,
we
that
coined
term.
It. Yeah. We certainly did not.
We certainly have not, yeah.
Like any term out there is probably already been coined,
yeah.
Except for fitness philosophers. I haven't found that out there yet.
I would love to say that, but I'm sure, I mean, there's no way in hell.
Oh, we coined the Chimwits.
Yeah, but I guess.
Yep,
but
there we go.
I don't
Let's
know. I'm afraid to look to see if we probably didn't. So we'll just leave it at that. There's no podcast called the Chimwits. That's
no,
enough.
No, there isn't.
Me.
There we go. That's plenty.
All right. So anyway, today we got an interview, obviously, because neither of us would be qualified to discuss financial fitness. So who do we have today?
We have Joan Sotkin. She is an expert in the field of prosperity and financial freedom. She's a coach. She has a course. She's written a book. She's got a podcast. All sorts of great stuff. She's a great resource, and I hope you guys enjoy the interview. Hey, everyone. We are here with Joan Sotkin. Hey, Joan. How's everything? Thanks for joining us today.
Terrific, and it's great to be here.
Awesome. So let's jump right in. Your career follows a very interesting trajectory, and that you had some great success followed by a bit of a hole that you had to pick yourself up from. Can you tell us about your career, maybe a little bit about that rise and fall and then the rise again?
Funny that you should call it a career. It's funny. I've never really looked at it that way.
That's
it's just
funny.
What I do. It's just what I
just
do.
Just what you do. Yeah.
It's just what I do. And It's a long story that I'll abbreviate because I've been around for a long time. But in the 1970s, I looked around and I had two millionaire brothers and I couldn't rub two pennies together. And I asked the question, why? Why did they manage to create the life that they did? And I was having so much trouble. I was sick. I was depressed. I had all these problems. And I wanted to know why. I was certainly just as smart as they were and couldn't figure out what was going on. So I had already, in the early 1970s, I had started meditating. And so I started really looking inside. In 1975, I gave away everything I owned and went wandering for quite a long time and actually kept notes. I had a diary, a day at a glance diary. And recently recreated the story in a book that I published, The Search for Connection, and have come to understand that life doesn't happen to us. It happens through us. And the thing that determines our life outcomes are our unique combination of thoughts, beliefs, emotions, and those emotions inform our decisions, which inform our behaviors. And that's how we create our life. The problem is that most of the habits and those thoughts, beliefs, emotions, and behaviors are all habits, and they form early in our lives. So we don't even recognize that they're habits and that they can change. So when people get to be in their 20s or 30s or 40s, and they're going, why isn't my life working? They rarely say, well, what are the habits that I have? What are the thinking habits and the feeling habits that I have that I can alter? And so that's what really interests me now, is how people can do that rather than saying what's wrong with me. It's just a matter of what habits do I have to change.
So now why did you sell everything and go on that journey?
Well, I was brought up at a time when women were supposed to get married and have children and be the dutiful wife, which I tried getting married twice and realized I was not meant for that career path. Definitely much too much laundry. Being the husband would have been a good idea, but not the wife. And so I really needed answers. I was sick. The doctors told me that I could never be healthy. And I was broke. So I had really no choice. I was living in California, had a ticket to go back to a family wedding in New Jersey. And so I had no idea what I could do next. And I decided to just go home with a suitcase full of stuff. And that was it. And so the decision, I guess my mind works in odd ways. And I was never taught to think about job. My father was an entrepreneur. Both my grandparents were entrepreneurs. And I was never taught to think in terms of job. And even if I did, I was too sick to even think about a job. So I had a giveaway day. I put up a sign in the local health food store. There was only one in 1976. And people came and took my stuff away. And it was wonderful.
Nice.
It was the most spiritual experience, because I was just sharing my life with everybody.
You know, recently I did a bit of a purge. I threw out a ton of stuff that I had that was cluttering up my apartment. It's really something you don't think about, how much stuff we just keep for no reason. And we have this psychological attachment to physical things, always worrying, oh, we're going to need this, you're going to need that. It was so liberating when I just threw it all away. I was like, wow, this feels awesome. So funny how that happens.
Right. And as a matter of fact, there was another time I gave stuff away in 1996 when I moved to Santa Fe. Again, I had no money and I was just starting to get well. And that inner voice, which had guided me to move to Santa Fe, said, give away everything that can be replaced. And so I moved to Santa Fe, not knowing anyone, with $200 and whatever fit in my car and my dog. I had my dog, my computer. In 1995, I got online for the first time. And that's when I started my first online business. So I knew I could make a living. And wasn't sure how that was gonna what was gonna look like, and I just got in the car and came to Santa Fe with whatever I owned at the moment.
So you mentioned that in your bio that the kind of lack of financial skills was an issue for you. What skills were you missing, and how did changing that or modifying that lead to your success, your future success?
Okay, I had this big business. In the 1980s, after I came back from all these journeys, I opened a business called Jones Crystals. And I was the first one to market crystals and minerals for healing and meditation nationwide. I had a line of stones called Jones Stones that were in 600 stores. Obviously, I knew how to build a business. I was bringing in today's money, $50,000 a month, and wound up going bankrupt. Big change in my life. And I realized I didn't know how to manage cash flow. And that I was keeping track of my money. I had a bookkeeper who came in 3 days a week, but I didn't know how to manage cash flow. And so today, in the work that I do, I focus on two things: who we are inside and how we manage our lives, including our money.
So you found that there was a connection between your emotional state of being and your financial behavior and decisions. How does this work?
Okay. So just think for a moment. When you look at your bank balance, very few people look at their bank balance and go, oh, wow, look at my bank balance. There's more often, I should be earning more, and look, I only have. And there's like a sinking feeling when you look at your bank balance. Can either of you relate to that?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Most people do. Well, that has nothing to do with the money. The money is neutral. It's just a bunch of numbers sitting on a computer or a spreadsheet or something. And that sinking feeling is your emotions that you're bringing to the money. The money is neutral. It's just a bunch of numbers. How you feel about the money is your habitual feeling about yourself and your position in the world. And those feelings begin in early childhood. And once you understand that, you can learn how to figure out what you're feeling without having a feeling vocabulary and decide what you'd rather be feeling. And there are simple brain training techniques you can use to develop a new response so that when you look at your money, it feels good no matter what the number is. Because, you know, people allow the number in their bank account to determine how they feel. And the odd thing is your habitual feelings really determine the number in your bank account. It's a little backwards.
So how does someone take that and then use it to use it for success or to modify their, I guess, financial behaviors?
Good question. Okay. So let's say you're looking at your bank balance and you know you're not comfortable. Whatever's going around in your head, all that blah, blah, blah that's going on in your head. So what you do is you look inside and you notice whether you're feeling contracted or expanded. Now, can you imagine when you're looking at your bank balance and you're not comfortable, you're feeling contracted, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's the first step, is recognizing when you feel contracted. And then you say to yourself, well, when did I feel this before? And you're bound to remember something either in the immediate past or way back when. But when you're remembering, you can't remember anything about money. It has to be about something else. It was when you were told as a kid that you weren't up to speed, that you weren't doing well, that you didn't get picked for the team. Whatever that is, that's that same feeling of contraction. And it can be a mixture of shame and deprivation. It can be a mixture of a bunch of different things. But it's contraction. So then you say to yourself, okay, because my protocol is recognize, release, replace, and repeat. Because in order to create new emotional responses to what you're normally doing, you have to build new neural pathways in your brain. It's a very simple process. Just recognize, release, replace, and repeat. And each experience starts to build and continues to build the neural pathways. So if you're sitting there feeling contracted and you get in touch with a time when you were a kid when someone took your toys away, that's going to be the same feeling as your fear of losing what you have or not having enough. Or if you didn't bond well with your parents and you were always longing for love and touch. I mean, all those things get acted out through money. So you just say, okay, what am I feeling? When did I feel it before? And then there are a number of techniques you can use to release the feeling. And I can give you some of those as we move along. And then you say, what would I rather be feeling? So on a very basic level, you'd rather be feeling expanded, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you take a deep breath and you allow yourself to expand. You remember a time when you felt really good about something you were doing. Your subconscious doesn't know time and space. It just knows what you tell it. So what you're telling it is, I am expanded. And you allow yourself to just let go. Like when you were giving away all that clutter, there was a feeling of letting go. And so you just let go and allow yourself to feel expanded. Wow. And just imagine your cells expanding and your mind expanding and your business expanding. And you just take yourself into that space rather than staying in the contracted space. Does that make sense?
That does. And that's funny because I think that's going to segue perfectly into what my next question is. And this is definitely a multi-tiered question. I think it will apply to just a lot of people. I can speak for myself and my partner, Ryan, as entrepreneurs that we are, people that are very close to me. Now, when we think about the modern sort of marketplace for entrepreneurs, it can get extremely discouraging. There's lots of competition, often from people that are not very qualified at what they do, that are competing with you. There's a lot that has to do with sales of a service or sales of a product, as you know, not really quality based, but just, you know, the look of something or the way something is promoted is often, you know, more important than the substance itself. So when you take that into consideration, and then when you think, like someone like me or Ryan or lots of other people I know, we have this really fantastic service that we can really give to the people, or maybe someone is writing a very valuable book or can just do something and they know they have these great skills. They know it's possible to make money off of it, but based on sort of the landscape of what entrepreneurs deal with nowadays, how do you not get discouraged? And then how do you sort of push past it, all the competition and all this sort of everything that's blocking you to actually start to make money using your abilities?
That is a brilliant question.
Thank you.
You know, I've been online for almost 22 years. I started my first website when there were only 500 websites. 500,000 websites.
Sure.
And it was easy. There was no cart. There was no, I had to use an order form, but it was easy because everybody was so excited about this new thing, and it was not like it is today. And I've had to face this increase in competition. When I started doing teleclasses in 2003, I would announce a teleclass, I could bring in $1,000 in a minute. You know, it's just really easy, right? And now there is so much competition, and I think you have to make a decision to really, you know, we talked about financial skills, learning cash flow management, but you also have to understand the marketplace. And a lot of people go into business without the required business skills and an understanding of how much marketing it takes in today's market. I just finished this course, Rewire Your Brain for Prosperity and Financial Freedom, and it's a great course, but now I have to spend a whole lot of time marketing it, like going on podcasts and telling people about it. You know, you have to find a marketing method that works for you, and I've tried a lot of different things online. I've got a number of things in my orbit now. I've got an Etsy shop. I've got books that I'm selling. I have courses. And I really see that I have to take one of those things and spend my time marketing that thing. That focus becomes so important now. And in terms of the discouraging and the competition, one of the things I've learned along the way is never to compare myself to someone else. And for example, I'm an information marketer, and there are so many people making claims that are so absurd, like you can sell easily to high-end clients. That's one of my favorite buttons that get pushed. And the other one is you can start making a lot of money quickly. It just doesn't happen for 99.9% of the people. So I'm up against people making a lot of false claims.
Sure.
And they're also, you know, they make the false claim, they do a launch, they make all this money, then they hire everybody to help them. So I've just had to say, okay, what do I want my life to look like? And stop focusing on the money. And decide what it is I really want from life. And so once I realize that I'm in a niche market, in other words, everybody who wants to make a lot of money is not going to be attracted to what I have to offer. Some of them are going to like it. People who have been on the personal growth path. I mean, I have a nice niche market. And am I going to make $1 million doing what I'm doing? I don't know. But what I did was I created a comfortable life for myself that didn't require a lot of money to sustain. And then I learned how to manage the money when it comes in so I don't use it all up. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Big time. Okay. And the problem is when you're in your 20s or 30s or even 40s and you're an entrepreneur, entrepreneurs basically are hopelessly optimistic. They're very irrationally optimistic. So if they make $1,000 this week, they figure they'll make the same $1,000 next week. And that doesn't happen. So you have to, as an entrepreneur, learn the marketplace, learn how to manage your money. And what I love about what you guys teach is the fitness stuff, that if you don't maintain your health, because your business is an extension of you, you're not gonna make money. Because if you're feeling down and depressed, I was a suicidal depressive for 15 years. And 2 days after I gave up sugar, I gave it up, absolutely gave it up. I was not depressed anymore. And so I made a decision never to eat sugar again. Mm-hmm. And that was almost 44 years ago. So in other words, you have to look at your business as part of you. And if you're not taking care of you, if you're not getting enough sleep, if you're not exercising on a regular basis, if you're not eating fresh whole foods and you're skipping meals because you haven't got time, if you're always in a rush and you're really stressing your adrenal glands, it's not going to last. And your energy isn't going to be there to do what you have to do.
So interesting. So you're a firm believer that kind of they're interconnected. Your kind of financial fitness is connected with your physical kind of
energy,
physical health and fitness.
It's all about energy. Yeah. Money is only energy. It's energy passing between two people or entities. Yeah. It's the way you interact with the world around you. And your energy is going to affect your money. Now, does that mean – now, I live really healthy. I eat only organic. I exercise every day. I haven't had sugar in 44 years. I mean, I get enough sleep and I never rush. So – and I'm in my 70s. And I can tell you this stuff works. Mm-hmm. That if you want to sustain – sustainability is a good word these days. And if you want to sustain it, you have to do that. Does that mean I always have a lot of money coming in? No. But it allows me to make very rational decisions about what I'm doing and to do multiple things like paying attention to my money and paying attention to the marketplace, meditating every day so I can get the ideas that are right for me. And this all comes together for your business. I mean, there's a reason why so many businesses fail. I mean, and, you know, it's interesting. I read an article the other day that millennials are going into business less often than any other generation, which I found kind of interesting. I would have thought that they did it more. But it's not easy to be in business for yourself. And if you just think you can just go into business and the business is going to take care of you, that's not true. You have to take care of yourself and the business.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it's interesting. It really – there's a connection between kind of being financially stable and physical fitness. And it seems like they're kind of guided by the same mechanisms, because often fitness programs are sabotaged by poor impulse control, you know, bad preparation. And, you know, even from my own personal experience, from the experience of others, like financial problems often come because of poor impulse control, you know, improper preparation. And yeah, it's an interesting connection between the two that I've never really considered.
Absolutely. In other words, I'm really glad that I had to give up sugar 44 years ago because I have more discipline than most people ever think about having. I mean, can you imagine not eating any sugar in this world?
Yes. And I did it. It was very, very, except from fruit. But yes, it was very difficult.
So you said I did it. Did you continue to do it?
No, that wasn't the plan. Okay. But I did it. I did it for the prescribed amount of time that I had planned on doing it.
Okay. So. Well, I think it's something you have to do because it can really hurt your body because of the inflammation. Yeah. So, you know, it's making a decision.
I think that you can put a gun to my head and pull the trigger if I have to go my whole life without eating sugar.
Well, I love it when people say to me, I can't give up my chocolate.
I'm not giving it. Like, I'll do, you know what? The Jim-Witzian concept with that is, yeah, you don't want to eat too much sugar, but you'd have to enjoy the parts of life that you enjoy. So a lot of that would mean making the other sacrifices necessary so that I could enjoy my little bit of sugar. But I don't overdo, okay. I don't overdo it. So I
right,
understand
right.
the concept.
Right, and that's important. And I mean, you're focused on your health and you're going to make, as you move along, you're going to make new decisions. I mean, it's just part of everybody evolves within themselves. And your what's right for you today is not going to be what's right for you 20 years from now. I mean, it's like when people talk about what is my purpose? My purpose has changed a whole lot of times time I've been around. And so for me, it's a matter of focusing on what's going on today and keeping up to date on what's going on. I have a brother who's 69 now, and he teaches one of the most successful spin classes in Boulder. Wow. Nice. Three times a week. He sometimes does it 2 hours in the same day, okay? And he's been living much the way I do. So he turned me on the other day to this thing that you can get on Amazon. It's like this acupressure pad. It's like laying on a bed of nails is the simple way of saying it. So he said it really affected him. So I got one for my back and neck. And I can't believe how much better I feel. Wow. At my age, I'm still finding ways of feeling better and better on a daily basis. Finding out what works for me, what doesn't work for me, and not pushing myself too hard. I have a tendency to find my limit.
That's so important. A lot of people don't. They don't know what their limit is, and they overdo it.
Exactly. And because they're comparing themselves to other people. Mm-hmm. It's like with the money. I should have more money at this age. Joe Schmo has more money than I do. That's none of your business.
Exactly.
Pay attention to you. That's why I think it's so important to meditate on a regular basis.
Yes.
Because to me, that's where you get in touch with what's really inside of you. And when you can feel yourself being really anxious about anything, well, that's not real. If you're anxious about what's going on in your life, then you're worried about the future. And that's totally a waste of time. Yes. It means you're making up a bad story about the future. You might as well make up a good one.
Exactly.
So to me, all of these things can affect your business and your life outcomes.
Sure. Now, something that I have gotten into recently is sort of redoing my living space. Even my car and office, home, all this stuff is, you know, getting a new furniture, making it more aesthetic, getting rid of the clutter, the extra stuff I don't use. And I have found that it's really cleared out my head and I'm able to focus better. And now I compare it with how I was through in my 20s. I never really put the time into giving myself a really nice living quarters, whether roommates or girlfriends, whoever I was living with. I always let them take care of it. And I'm curious because I bet you have some really cool insight on this. How does your home life, where you sleep, where you eat, where you watch TV, all of those things affect your work and maybe even your sort of mental state when it comes to focusing and anything along those lines?
Well, remember I said it's all a matter of energy.
Yes.
And the energy flow through your home makes a difference. There's a whole science called feng shui. Are sure. you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay, well, feng shui practitioners will come in and tell you to move this and move that. Now, I've had sure. two feng shui people come into my house, and I live kind of zen. I mean, I just can't stand clutter. I love empty space. My house is pleasant, and I have people over here all the time, but I have no clutter. My closets have big empty spaces. It's a matter of energy flow. And you're absolutely right. When you take care of yourself and your surroundings, it's a matter of awareness. You've changed your level of awareness. Can you see that?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Sure.
So it's a matter of awareness and consciousness. And you can't possibly know in your 20s what you know in your 30s. And what you know in your 70s. I mean, when I first started doing my podcast, I wanted to hide my age because I was hanging out with all these 20 and 30-year-olds. And then I said, wait a minute, I've been around a long time, and I can bring some wisdom to the table and share what I've learned along the way so that it doesn't take other people as long as it did, as long as it took me to get where I am and to get as comfortable as I am. And the idea is not to have any regrets about anything you did in the past. Sometimes you have to learn what you're not before you find out what you are. And to just let your life evolve and to learn to be satisfied with who you are and what you have today. Because if you're not satisfied today, you'll never be satisfied because that's not your habit.
Well, I guess that's a sort of a perfect segue to the next question, next thing I was wondering. I think a lot of people wonder this as well. Ryan and I talk about sort of fitness money that you put in the bank. Every time you work out, that's money that you put in your fitness bank that will certainly pay off later, that the dividends will pay off later. Every time you eat healthy, that's money in your fitness bank. But what about real money in a real bank? So spending now versus putting it away for the future. What's the balance of making yourself happy, getting these things versus putting it all away? Like, we know that there's a balance, but I'm sure you could think something a little deeper than just, oh, everyone says, oh, you have to find the balance. But it's like, okay, well, what's the balance?
I don't know. I don't know if I can really define that. I mean, I came from a debting family. My yeah. father was a compulsive debter. My mother was the co-compulsive debtor. You know, he'd go out and buy a boat and she'd say, Bruce, it's like this constant, he was the child and she was the critical parent. And I never learned, I actually learned how to save. But what happened every time I have money saved, someone would come along and need it and borrow it from me and they wouldn't pay it back. So I learned that it didn't pay to save. And so for me, and I'm hopelessly optimistic, I really had to learn how to save. Now, I haven't done a great job of it because I was sick for so many years and every penny I had went into whatever health things I needed. And I find as an entrepreneur, it's so easy to justify spending for your business or your health, two things that you can always say, well, I can get that. So what I've learned is that I have to learn how to be frugal. There's a difference between frugal and miserly.
Yes.
But you have to really, this is all discipline that we talked about before. What decisions do I have to make? Do I really need that brand new couch, or can I find something on Craigslist? How much do I really have to spend in order to make myself comfortable? Now, the problem when you're younger is that you're always looking at the shiny things that are waiting there to be bought in this society that we live in. Oh, get this brand new car. And, you know, I drive a 10-year, almost 11-year-old Toyota Solera convertible. It's a hot looking car. I bought it when I bought it a couple of years ago. It only had 48,000 miles on it. And it looks terrific. People go, oh my God, what a great car. you don't have to have the biggest car on the block or the newest car on the block. I saw a story the other day that Warren Buffett took someone out to lunch, Bill Gates out to lunch at McDonald's, and used coupons to pay for the meal.
Well, you know that McDonald's is Warren Buffett's favorite food. That's his favorite meal.
Right, and he pays for it with coupons.
That's his right.
You know, people who are millionaires are frugal. Mm-hmm. I was having a conversation with my friend the other day. She has a brand new BMW, and she buys very nice clothes, and she spends a lot of money on her hair. Her husband is a very successful retired dentist, but she's frugal. She really makes clear decisions about what she's buying and why she's buying it. And it takes thinking in order to make that kind of decision. So is it balance? I don't know exactly what that means. I think it's decisions. Mm-hmm. I had to learn that every time I made money, that I took some of it and put it aside in a separate account. And I went through what everybody else goes through. Oh, I saved a whole bunch of money and suddenly I needed new tires or I had a health thing. It wasn't a savings account. It was a life happens account.
Yes.
And you have to understand the difference between the two. And the thing is, whatever you're doing with your money today is just what you're doing. You're not doing anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. You just have to learn how to deal with money and develop the habits that will allow you to do that. When I said to myself, I have to learn how to be frugal, it's like I had to teach my brain to like savings better than I liked spending.
Hmm. So I have a quick follow-up to that. I've heard a lot of people say, when almost in justification of a big purchase maybe that they don't need, well, I'll just make more money.
Right.
Right. Is that a healthy thing to do?
No.
Or is
no.
that right? Because they have nothing to do with each other. You can still make more money, but you don't need the purchase or something along
right.
those lines.
But that's how my mind used to work. It's like, because I'm hopelessly optimistic as an entrepreneur. Of course I can make more money. I didn't say to myself, how many hours will I have to work? How much marketing do I have to do? Is what I'm offering in the marketplace really something that they want? I mean, for people who have had any kind of deprivation in their life, whether they were didn't have the proper bonding or their parents didn't give them what they needed, they're going to have that feeling, if only I buy what I want, I'll feel okay. And it's brain science that when you get what you want and you have that dopamine rush, pretty soon you're going to be looking for the next rush. You know? So wow. You have to train yourself to get the dopamine rush when you save instead of when you spend.
So you mentioned your course earlier. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your course, what like kind of what you have to offer and how they can benefit from it?
Sure. The course, I worked on this really hard. I mean, I put together this, you know, the course includes my book, Build Your Money Muscles, 9 Simple Exercises for Improving Your Relationship with Money. And it includes 2 other courses, but basically it's about understanding your thought, belief, emotions, those habits, your thoughts, beliefs, emotional habits, and your behaviors, that they're just habits and how to alter them without saying there's something wrong with me that needs fixing. In other words, what you're saying is, this is the outcome I'm getting. I understand that these habits have led to this. What do I have to do instead? And using the recognize, release, replace, and repeat and the brain science, I teach people how to do this, and it's much easier than saying, oh, I've done this wrong and I should have done something else, and you know, just picking on yourself all the time because those negative thoughts aren't helping you at all. And so the course walks you through this process.
Wow.
And there's also an option of participating in calls on a regular basis. And I just, you know, it's very recently been released, but it's really explains everything I've talked about in simple terms. And I understand that you're going to resist it and you're not going to want to do it. And so I help you get over that too.
That's great. So now I hear that there is a little deal for all of our listeners where we can check this out.
Yes, for a 50% discount.
Wow, that's awesome.
And if you go to prosperityplace.com/rewire, you'll get led to the course. And there's a coupon, RYBPOD50, Rewire Your Brain Podcast 50, RYBPOD50, and you'll get 50% off. And I offer the most amazing guarantee, not a 30-day guarantee, it's a forever guarantee, but you have to finish the course.
Wow.
And I can see how much of the course you've completed. So if you complete the course, and I say it's going to take you time to get the course, to go through the course, because you're going to resist, and you're going to take it and then go away and come back. That happens with my book too. But if you finish the course, I can guarantee you're going to have positive results.
Wow. So now you also have I guess you mentioned your book, and you have a podcast. What are these, and where can we find them?
Well, everything. You can find everything at prosperityplace.com.
Okay, great. So we'll go to check out Prosperity Place, and then we can, on all these great resources that you provide, people can check out.
Yes. And so start at prosperityplace.com. I'm going to be kind of redoing the site, but
great.
You know, being in transition seems to be what life is about.
Joan, you are amazing. You have an incredible wealth of knowledge, and it was really fun talking to you. I feel like this sort of stuff, when we talk about financial decisions, it can be very laborious, it can be very boring, and it can be very uncomfortable. But none of these came true when talking about, when talking to you. You make the whole thing very light and very easy to understand. So thank you very much for giving us all this great wisdom.
It's certainly my pleasure. And, this is my goal, is to make it so it doesn't take you as long to learn what I learned as it took me.
Yep, that's
because get to be really feeling good about yourself when you're in your 40s. I know an awful lot of wealthy people who are not happy with who they are and what they do. So the money's not going to fix it. It's all this other stuff that's going to get you to the money that will fix it.
Yes, and of course, one of the big things that's left out of today is the understanding of how important wisdom and knowledge and experience is. We live in the age where that gets sort of put to the side because there's always someone telling you what to do, or everyone always thinks they can, get a computer and do this, or pick up a book or pick up a camera and become a photographer, whatever it is. And they don't think they need the experience, but experience, I think, now more so than ever is
And that, that's why I think it's important to get a coach who has experience.
Yes.
I mean, I love working with younger people because they get it so fast.
Yeah.
They just don't know what they don't know.
Yes, that's it.
Once you understand what you don't know, I love what the young people are doing today because they know so much. I went to a webinar the other day about copywriting. When I was learning how to write copy, so many years ago, I had this swipe file in my file cabinet, and it took me, and I had nowhere to go. These were people who, I see people with lines on their face and people without lines on their face. These were people without lines on their face. And they knew so much.
Sure.
They knew so much more than I know today. So with the internet, you just have to be willing to not think you don't know enough today.
Joan, thank you so much for coming on the Jim Wits, and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
So are you expecting the directions that we went in?
I never know with our interviews what direction anything goes in, but
I love our interviews. They always take a turn. It's almost like a little artistic in a way, not to pat ourselves on the back.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of interviews that we listen to in other podcasts, radio shows are very formulaic, and I love the fact that our guests are really cool and have all this different knowledge, and it can go to be very technical or more spiritual and ethereal, and I guess we never know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I felt guilty. I felt guilty at one point because I went out for probably the most expensive meal of my life last night.
Was it worth it?
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was place Sushi Nakazawa.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi? It's a great documentary on Netflix. Yeah. And there's one of the kind of characters, or not characters, he's a real person, but his apprentice moved to New York. Nakazawa opened up his own place. It was spectacular. I mean, okay. I was ready. I knew how much I was going to spend.
You were prepared.
But I mean, like, you know, I tend to eat fast. And yep. You do too, but like I would chew as much as I possibly could just to get every bit of flavor out of it. And then like I didn't want to drink water because I didn't want the water to ruin the flavor of the sushi. It was incredible. But I didn't feel any guilt or anything until she was mentioning like spending, you know, some people spend money on silly things, or you know, and I was like, I mean, it wasn't silly. I don't really regret it, but it was a lot of money to spend on a meal.
Here's my theory on that, whether it's right or not. Life is about experiences.
That is true.
So you have to spend money on certain experiences, right? You could always save and never do anything, and then you're going to be really old and never have done anything. And then maybe you'll have enough money to do stuff then, but part of enjoying life is doing stuff while you're young and healthy.
Yeah.
So it's about finding that balance, which if you listen to the interview, like you find out that that's almost a meaningless term because it's different for everyone, and it's really hard to really quantify what the balance is. And so,
I think you make a great point that it is hard to quantify, but it is about experiences, and I think that part of that dopamine hit is maybe looking forward to it. So yeah, you know, if you traveled all the time, let's say, like my big expenses tend to be traveling and experiences. So things like that, are going to a show. And if you do that all the time, it depresses that, or you don't get as much of that hit, or you need more. But if you travel once a year or twice a year and you're able to kind of look forward to that, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that it's enough time that you work hard and you anticipate and you get that experience, but it's, you're not doing it so much that you just kind of like, there's some kids I teach and parents are really, really well off and they're traveling all the time and they're like, yeah, we have to go to Barcelona next week. And it's like, really?
Poor
kid, really. You got to go to Barcelona next week. Aww. That sucks. You got to go. You got to not play video games. Actually, now that I say that, I'm like, that's actually my stepson too. and we're certainly not super well off like that. But I guess it's partially as a kid thing. But no, in general, like I do know, like I have a client that has to go to Paris for a friend's wedding and they can afford it. It's like, I got to go to Paris. I really don't want to go. It's like, really, you know. So,
although I can understand, I want to go to a wedding because you're not there to. You might have to spend a lot of money, but you're not there to enjoy it. You're there to do all these things.
Oh, well, it depends.
That's totally different.
No, but they're going to be in. They're going the wedding. They don't have. They're not part. They're
going
to be in Paris, and they'll have one day where they have to deal with the wedding.
Okay,
so it's just a matter of like, you know. Yeah, if you do things too much, if you travel too much, if you have certain experiences, you know, too much, it's harder to then. It's harder to really appreciate it, I guess. But I certainly appreciated that meal.
Yes,
although we'll not be doing that again for at least a year, if not more.
Not until the Jim Witz gets their first big contract.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Then no, even then. All right. Well.
You know where to find us. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was good. We covered a lot. And I think it was important because sometimes we do get bogged down in in the technical details, and it's, you know, a lot of it is just your mindset and approach, and we deal with that with fitness too. You know, everyone wants the next big program and what's gonna, all the details, like what do I have to do, what do I have to eat, how many calories, how many this, how many that, how many reps, and a lot of times it's not the actual program, but it's your mindset and your approach to it.
Sure.
And as long as you apply certain principles and you approach something properly, it'll be effective. And we even talked about how kind of approaching finances in many ways is the same as approaching fitness, and they are connected in a lot of ways. So yeah, that's it. So as usual, all of our stuff at thejimwitz.com. If you haven't rated us, please rate us on iTunes. As always, that helps us a lot. And if you haven't downloaded the app and you have an Android or iOS device, definitely download the app. That way you get instant notification, or not if you don't want to get that annoying notification on your phone. But you will know when we have a new episode out. All right, that's it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gimlets.